Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Here we go. Sears is greening up by selling men's suits made of what? A, organic cotton, B, recycled plastic bottles, or C, hemp?
I'm going to have to go with A.
Organic cotton?
Yes.
No, it is incorrect. They're actually making men's suits made out of recycled plastic bottles.
Wow.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, start the green light.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And one of the ways you can tell that the holidays are truly over is when the whole staff is back on the show. Heather Fry is in studio, has recovered from her laryngitis and whatever else you had.
It was some nasty, like, flu-ish style bug that seemed to spread like wildfire through suburbia.
Yeah, well, especially your family, it seems.
Well, we have children and we have relatives that work in the medical field, so it's a double whammy.
Yeah. Are we having trouble getting hold of Jerry Edelman?
Yes, we are.
Hey, Jerry, if you're listening, we're trying to get you and we're getting voicemail. And it's weird because he called me this morning, said, call the number.
Yeah, I just tried both, so... 773-838-9278 is what he should call if he's hearing us right now.
Yeah, all right. And we're going to be talking to Jerry Edelman, who's the president and CEO of Openlands, in just a second, along with Howard Lerner, the executive director for the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Now, why are we doing that? Well, this week, a group of environmental and conservation organizations, about 17 of them, met in a room over at the ELPC, actually, and unveiled what they call the Green Growth Platform for Chicago's next mayor. 20 key questions on improving our city's environment, creating jobs, and growing our green economy. And we will be discussing that in the first half hour of the program. As I said, the regular staff is back, including Rick DeMille, who's here around 9:30 to give us the weather forecast. And then in the second hour, and you'll notice there's a theme for the show today, it's the environment, it is local food, because in the second hour, Zena Murray, who runs the Logan Square Kitchen, is going to be on the program. And of course, politics all plays a role in this, because this past Wednesday, see, I went to the meeting on Wednesday at the Logan Square Kitchen, where mayoral candidate Miguel Del Valle showed up to talk to enviros also, but these are, I guess, what we call foodies, and people who run things like shared kitchens and have urban farms and are interested in local food issues, and Del Valle came to listen to their concerns, and there are a number of concerns, especially with certain departments of the city of Chicago who frankly don't quite understand where all this is going. It's just moving faster than the city is capable of keeping up with it in terms of policy. So we will be talking to her about that, and she's got a really fascinating story. And then towards the end of the show, our green growing segment is back with Mr. Brown Thumb. And again, it's about an election, and that is One Seed Chicago. This is going to be the fourth year for this, program, initiative, where the voters in and around Chicago pick a seed out of three that they like and they vote for, and then that seed is passed around to the people who vote. You get a packet of seeds, and in other ways it's given out to teachers and other people in the city who want to grow it. And the subject this year is vegetables. So there are three vegetables on the list, and I will give those to you later on, and we'll talk to Mr. Brown Thumb. We still haven't found Mr. Edelman? Are we still...
I have struck voicemail twice now. Three times, actually. On both lines.
Hmm.
So he might be out of a service area? I don't know.
I don't think so, no. He wouldn't have... I don't think he would have called this morning to give me that, but let's...
I'll keep trying.
All right, you keep trying. Let's go to line one, meanwhile, and talk to Howard Lerner, Executive Director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Good morning, Howard. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. Glad to join you.
I'm so glad you're here. And, of course, you and I and Jerry and a bunch of other people sat around in your offices over the last, I don't know, month and a half, something like that, to hammer out these questions that are being proposed to all of the mayoral candidates to answer about the environment. Let me make a comment here. Yesterday, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Rahm Emanuel was on with Dick Kay on this very radio station in the afternoon for about, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes. And I listened to the interview, and I listened intently because I wanted to hear what he had to say about the environment. Now, a friend of mine claims that she heard something. I did not. And, you know, and I went over the tape this morning, and at least as much as I could do before the show, and I did not hear a lot about that. And I think it speaks to what we are trying. And I say we. I'm speaking as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, but it speaks to what we're trying to do in terms of getting the candidates on board. Would you not say that?
You know, Mike, I'm pretty optimistic about it, and a little bit more than you are in what your last comments were. You know, let's look at the four major candidates and what they've been saying and what they've been doing, okay? You refer to City Clerk, former State Senator Miguel Duvalier. He held a press conference on Thursday over at the Fisk and Crawford coal plants and said, our position is time to finally clean these plants up or shut them down. Former Congressman Emanuel put out a policy platform a couple of weeks ago talking about the importance of energy efficiency around the city and ways in which we can retrofit buildings and save people and businesses money on their utility bills, reduce pollution, and create jobs in our communities. He's been a leader as a congressman on protecting the Great Lakes. Carol Mosley Braun has run a organic food company for the last couple of years, cares deeply about family farms and organic food processing. Gary Chico, strong candidate for mayor, was president of the Park District, chair of the board of directors, in effect, of the Chicago Park District. So many of our groups have worked with the candidates in different ways on different issues. Groups like Friends of the Parks and others who focus on the parks worked closely with Gary Chico. Many work closely with Carol Mosley Braun on different food and organic health issues. People worked very closely with Congressman Emanuel on the Great Lakes issues, and people have worked very closely with State Senator and City Clerk Miguel Duvalier on environmental issues involving energy issues and now the Fisk and Crawford plants. So I think what you're seeing is the candidates stepping up. They all have track records on the environment that we respect. We've worked, different groups have worked with all of them, and they're stepping up now because voters care. You know, for many years, the mayor has talked about our shared view that Chicago become the greenest city in America. And as the candidates are doing their polling, and as they talk to people in the neighborhoods and communities, and just they know our city, they know that people and voters care about having a better environment, a healthy environment, a place that's more livable, and a community in which we can do all that and create jobs and improve our economy and grow our green economy. They're looking for votes. They know what voters care about. And voters in Chicago care about greening up our city, not having that been just one of those things that we did under Mayor Daley. This is more enduring. This is going forward. So put me in the camp of being an optimist.
Well, good. Actually, I'm going to be an optimist, too, if only because we have come so far in the last 21 years. We know that Mayor Daley has done a lot of good, as you mentioned, in terms of the environment for the city of Chicago. But there's still a lot to be done. And that's where the list of questions comes in that we put together, that this coalition of environmental groups put together, because some things are not finished, and some of them are very important. For instance, I'm sure you would agree, CTA and funding for mass transit in the city of Chicago. Where would you put that in the scheme of things about what we need to accomplish?
I mean, well, let's say it's simple and get to the point. You know, no good public transit, no green city. I mean, the fact of the matter is, having a transit system that works for people to go to see their friends, to do business, to go to their jobs is essential for having a green city. It's essential for mobility. It's essential for people enjoying and wanting to be in our great city. CTA, there have been some improvements, but there have also been some ways in which all of us who take CTA on a regular basis know it's terribly lacking. Now, part of that has been the cutbacks in federal funding. Let's face it, you can't have a good urban transit system anywhere around the country where you don't get significant federal funding. And we've got to do something about Washington, even in that very hard situation. But there are things that we can do here, and most fundamentally, we need a mayor who focuses and prioritizes and says, I'm going to put some of my chips at the federal level and at the state level to making CTA work better and getting the funding we need to do that.
Let's go back to the genesis of getting these groups together to come up with these questions. You say you're an optimist, but obviously you wanted, you felt and others felt that it would be good to point them in the right direction. It's not that, as you mentioned, all of the candidates are aware of green issues. What do you think is the importance of bringing together 17 environmental and conservation groups in and around Chicago? And I note that ELPC, of course, is broader in scope, covers the Midwest, not just Chicago, as is Openlands. And we're still trying to get Jerry Adelman here. And I hope, Jerry, if you're listening, 773-838-9278. I don't know if we had the wrong number or what, but he's unavailable at the moment.
Well, Mike, the Environmental Law and Policy Center is the Midwest leading environmental legal advocacy and eco-business innovation organization. We operate beyond Chicago throughout the state in Illinois, and as a matter of fact, I'm in Springfield today for the governor's inauguration. We also have offices in Iowa, Minneapolis, in Wisconsin, in Ohio, in North Dakota and South Dakota. We have 7 offices in the states around the Midwest. Chicago's our home. I'm a Chicagoan. I live a mile and a half from where I was born on the far north side of Chicago. We care about Chicago a lot. We also care about the rest of the Midwest and national as well. Well, why did these groups come together? And there are really 3 reasons. First of all, a number of us felt getting a common, shared, agreed-upon platform would be more powerful than if 17 leading Chicago groups all sort of did it on their own. There is value in common good. There's a value in us getting together and laying it out and saying, this is something that we all stand behind. And some of the groups cared more about clean energy, and some cared more about recycling, and some cared more about transportation, and some cared more about the parks. We put together a common green platform that was a terrific collaborative effort by groups working together and saying, let's get this in one place and on one good piece of paper. And that green platform is something that can be enduring and goes beyond the mayoral campaign. It's going to go into what the city action ought to be when our next mayor is elected. You know, the second point is that, you know, we represent a lot of people. If you put together the 17 groups in the room, our supporters include well more than 100,000 Chicagoans who vote. And what an election about, of course, is people who vote, and to the extent that we can compare and contrast the responses to the questionnaire, the 20 questions on the environment from the different candidates, we can provide some guidance to voters of where the candidates stand. And Chicagoans care about greening up our city. Chicagoans who vote care about the environment. And those Chicagoans want to know where the candidates stand. And when 17 leading organizations come together, put together the green platform and a 20 questionnaire for each of the candidates, they're going to respond to that, and the voters are going to look to see where they are. You know, and third, you know, as the candidates respond to that and voters see where they are, that's going to push the envelope a little bit. I think we're going to see candidates wanting to be perceived by the voters as on the right side of environmental issues that matter to a lot of us. And that's going to serve to raise the bar a little bit. So for all those reasons, getting everybody together and doing this in a collaborative way in which it wasn't just one group doing this and another group doing that and a third group saying this, but one common shared platform that everybody bought into, that I think everybody feels really good about, that's important to move our issues.
You know, and you mentioned the organizations and the votes. Of course, I believe that people who are environmentalists, I would think, are more likely to vote if they're already active in preserving their environment. They are certainly going to go to the ballot box. The groups are Active Transportation Alliance, Alliance for the Great Lakes, Blacks in Green, Center for Neighborhood Technology, Chicago Recycling Coalition, Citizens Action Illinois, Environmental Law and Policy Center, Environment Illinois, Friends of the Chicago River, Friends of the Forest Preserves, Friends of the Parks, Little Village Environmental Justice Organization, Metropolitan Planning Council, Nuclear Energy Information Services, Open Lands, Respiratory Health Association of Metropolitan Chicago, and Sierra Club, Illinois Chapter. That's quite a list of organizations.
It is, Mike, and I'm glad you rattled them off rather than asked me to do them all by memory. Look, these are the 17 leading environmental conservation and civic organizations in Chicago that work on environment and natural resources protection, protecting our lakes and our rivers and our parks, our clean air, our clean water, working across the board, better transportation, the CTA question you asked. Everybody came together and said, let's work together, let's break into subgroups, let's write up good questions, let's hone this down, let's get it together, and let's work together through the environmental community. You know, and all of us are really proud to have put this together. You know, people met, as you mentioned, in the Environmental Law and Policy Center's office, but there were a lot of emails and phone calls beyond that. We had a press conference that you and others were at last week, got a lot of media attention. If people want to look at the questionnaire and want to see a description of the press conference and so forth, take a look at elpc.org, Environmental Law and Policy Center's website. It's there on the front page, elpc.org, and you can click the link and you can see the press conference, you can see the questionnaire. And we'll have a new website up that will be focused on this entirely as soon as we get the candidates' responses to the question.
Now, the candidates have been told that they should have those in by the 12th of January, which is, gives them about a week to from when it was sent out. As you said, it'll be posted. And I've noticed in following this over the past few days that most of the, or at least many of the other organizations have already posted the questions on their websites as well. I've got it on MikeNovak.net. It's also on Chicago Recycling Coalition website. I've seen it on Open Lands. I've seen it on Environment Illinois. So you can't you can't take three steps without tripping over these questions, which is, I think, great because people should look at them. And very quickly, I'm not going to read all of them because there's 20 here, and they do go into some detail. But in general, there's categories that include climate change solutions and clean energy, which includes the Fisk and Crawford coal plant question, supporting the Chicago Climate Action Plan, investment in auditing and retrofitting all city-owned and city-leased buildings in the next 5 years with energy-efficient measures, advanced renewable energy to power homes and businesses, purchasing more renewable energy. Will you commit the city of Chicago to purchasing at least 20% of their electricity supply from locally or in-state generated renewable energy resources by 2014? Cleaner construction, that is to say, using cleaner diesel fuel. Then there's the recycling, of course, which stands on its own. As a lot of people know, this is an issue that's front and center in terms of the number of the candidates. Clean water. And it's not just disinfecting. Maybe you want to speak to this. It's not just disinfecting the Chicago River, but it's about saving water with the Chicago's MeterSafe program. That's actually the first question on here, and with a goal of reaching 50% of single-family homes in two flats during the first term in office. Do you want to address that a little bit, Howard?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I mean, Mike, these questions, as you're describing, span the gamut. You know, there are questions on parks, there are questions on clean air, there are questions on clean water. That's what this is intended to do, and it reflects the vitality of all the groups that have been a part of this.
Yeah,
if you want, I'm glad to address any of the particular questions.
No, it's okay. You probably we don't have a whole lot more time, but the water issues also include better stormwater management, keeping invasive species out of Lake Michigan. Then there's the transportation issue. We alluded to that earlier with increased funding for CTA and how that's going to happen. Cleaner CTA buses. High-speed rail development in Chicago, supporting cyclists, pedestrians, bicycles on the streets of Chicago, relieving congestion and encourage car sharing and electric vehicles. As you said, parks and open space are a huge issue. Do you commit to adding neighborhood public park space in communities that have less than 2 acres of parks per 1,000 residents? Preserving the Lake Calumet region, which is a big deal, completing the lakefront parks, completing the South Lakefront Park, the last 4 miles along the lakefront. And then finally, another area near and dear to my heart, local food. Will you support coordinated and flexible city policies and zoning ordinances that will remove barriers and provide incentives for growing, producing, and selling locally grown foods in Chicago neighborhoods? And that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about in the second hour of the show today, because it's a huge problem, and the various city agencies are bumping into themselves and don't really, in some ways, know how to handle this. And it's going to be up to a new mayor to help coordinate those policies in the city of Chicago.
Right. The key here, Mike, is next Wednesday we'll get the responses from the mayor. All of our groups are committed to work together to get those responses out to our members and supporters. We think there can be quite a buzz around the city about what are the mayoral candidates saying on the environment. And we want to make sure that as people begin to move toward making their decision of who they're going to vote for, they know where the different candidates stand. So if you're a member of an environmental group or a supporter, check the website, check your emails. All of us are pretty committed to getting to you information on where do the mayoral candidates stand. And we're not suggesting that people be single-issue voters. People are going to think about a lot of issues. Education, people are going to think about public safety. People are also thinking about where do the candidates stand on the environment, and that's part of how they're going to decide who they vote for. And let's all work together to, first of all, get that information out to Chicagoans who vote. Secondly, when you see the mayoral candidate at a forum, ask him or her, where do you stand on these issues? Let's know where they stand. Third, make sure that when you vote, and please make sure that you do vote, think about what are the differences of the candidates on these issues. Whoever gets elected, then we need to work with him or her to make sure this gets implemented. Chicago can't rest on our laurels. you know, there's a lot of competition out there to be the greenest city in America. We want Chicago to be a leader. We want to do that both because it attracts jobs, people, and business and economic and social vitality to our city, and also because for us it makes it a great city to live in.
Let me mention one more thing before I let you go, Howard, and you're aware of this, that Friends of the Parks and the Streeterville Organization of Active Residents, in partnership with a number of environmental groups and community groups, is putting on a forum, the Chicago Mayoral Forum on Community and Environmental Issues, and that's going to be a week from Wednesday, January 19th, at the Chicago Marriott downtown, 540 North Michigan Avenue on the 7th floor. Andy Shaw, the executive director of the Better Government Association, will be the moderator for that. I went to a meeting about that the other day, and there's going to be a bunch of tickets available for that. As a matter of fact, I have some tickets that I'm going to try to give away in the show, but I know that a lot of environmental organizations have tickets for that, and a number of the questions that were developed for the Green Growth Platform will be presented to the candidates in that public forum on the 19th of January at the Chicago Marriott downtown. So I thought I would throw that in as well. So to know that in a public, you know, in addition to the how they're going to respond in writing, which will be posted on ELPC and elsewhere and on my website and wherever we can put it up, the candidates will have a chance to speak in public on some of these issues on the 19th. Howard Lerner, thank you so much. I have no idea what happened to Jerry. He's lost in the ether someplace.
We like Jerry. He's a good friend and a good colleague.
He's a great guy. And, you know, if he's out there and he still wants to call in, I'll talk to him. But enjoy the inauguration. Thank you so much for your work on the Green Growth Platform and for being on the show this morning. And you and I will talk soon.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Have a good weekend, Mike.
You too. Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You've just been working your tail off trying to get Mr. Edelman.
I have a hurt dialing finger.
I talked to him this morning. These things happen. This is live radio.
Mm-hmm.
We're local, we're live.
Yep.
And
independent, and it doesn't always work out.
Yeah, right. Sometimes it's on the fly.
Sometimes.
Oh, wait, the phone is ringing.
Oh, ooh,
if that's
ooh,
Jerry,
ooh.
I'm talking to him. Let me take care of some business, okay? Now that you're looking at Christmas and New Year in your rearview mirror like some pothole that just took out your suspension, it's time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks that you've neglected, such as repotting the unruly houseplants that were temporarily shoved into the hall closet when you made room for the Christmas tree. SIDS greenhouses can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant, and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Here's a tip, though. Remember that we're in the dead of winter, and most tropicals don't need much, if any, fertilizer right now. Hold off on the fertilizer, cut back on the water, give them plenty of light. There's a great issue in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine for the January-February issue about keeping tropicals alive indoors. Talk about that later on. And if you've been enjoying a lovely poinsettia for the last several weeks, you're in luck. You know, every time I said poinsettia last week, Leah just kind of
giggled.
Yeah,
she was a big fan of the poinsettia.
She likes the poinsettia. I do too.
And I want to thank her for doing a great job last week. She was my savior, so thanks,
yes.
Leah.
Well, especially stepping in at the last second.
Yeah.
Leah Petrusiak, producer du jour,
yes,
last week. By the way, if you've got that poinsettia, you can trade it in through February 1st. You take the poinsettia to SIDS and you get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. Now, don't bring in a poinsettia that's just dead as a doornail, okay? Don't do that. That's not cool. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in... Well, maybe they will take it dead as a doornail. I didn't ask them whether they would do that. Maybe they would. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
On the second day of the new year, well, that was last week, on the ninth day of the new year, my gardener said to me, many gardeners are already planning this year's show in their backyards, don't ask me why, but gardeners are like that. In Zone 5, where most of us are located, gardeners start reading and planning. They get their seed catalogs they send off for new stuff, which means that they should get their hands on Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is out, and it's the annual garden planning edition, complete with three holes punched in the side so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. In the issue, our very own Beth Botts has an article with 8 tips for planting a successful garden if you've never done it before. So you newbies, you might want to take some advice from Beth Botts. This is the season for indoor plants, as I just mentioned, and there's a story about how to keep them alive and happy. The secret, according to the story, is light. Light, light. And that's pretty much true. There's a few other things. There's a few other caveats, like don't overwater, don't put near drafts, that kind of thing. But light is a big, big deal. Near and dear to my heart, my buddy Michelle Byrne Walsh tells you how to grow an organic lawn. There's even my column on the inside back page, and I can assure you that it was written without the use of harmful chemicals. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com. You can tell it's a new year because we're getting back to classic rock. You gotta get.
I'm not complaining.
Really?
I'm glad there's no more jingle bells ringling in the back of my ears.
Ching, ting, tingling.
Yeah. You must be even happier.
Oh, you know, I've decided that someday, because I do a lot of caroling during the holiday season, I've been thinking about this for several years. I want to write a Christmas carol about how much. It's got to be about a caroler who's just totally burned out. You know, and he's done with most wonderful time of the year, and dude, if I hear Silent Night one more time, I'm going to scream, and I think it would be a pretty funny carol, and the idea would be to incorporate all those songs in there somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And does he befriend, like, a disgruntled in-store Santa, and together they discover the true meaning of Christmas?
An indoor drunk Santa.
They made a movie about that already, I think.
I know, they did, didn't they? Okay, well, can't go down that road.
Nope.
Let's bring in, for the new year, because he hasn't been here before, not this year, meteorologist Rick DeMaio. How are you, Rick?
Good. I'm walking along the lakefront here at beautiful Leone Beach, otherwise known as Loyola Beach, up here on 7200th North Sheridan, looking at some amazing ice flows. And why do some of these ice flows look like the kind of rice cakes you would see in the Flintstones? They're like tremendous. I thought you were done with caroling.
No, that was Flintstones music.
Okay. I know that.
Oh, okay.
Are we going to get any more winter thunderstorms, Rick?
No, and that was an amazing event, wasn't it?
That was crazy, and it made me wonder why you never get thunder and lightning during a blizzard.
Well, no, actually, did you say you wonder why you never get thunder and lightning?
Well, I don't recall, like, major blizzards there being, like, lightning and thunder like there was at that storm in the last
week
of December.
Oh, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
I just remember the snow and the wind.
It happens right. Every now and then, doesn't it, Rick?
Every now and then it happens, more so along the East Coast, where you have a lot of, you know, Atlantic and Gulf moisture entrained into the updrafts of the big, large scale system. But here in Chicago, very difficult to get lightning and thunder. But I didn't talk to you last week, Mike, because I was enjoying some lovely 58 degree weather down in Central Florida. But it did warm up there a couple of days, so I had some enjoyable summer weather in Florida. But even North Central Florida this time of year, you're generally in the upper 60s. But
hey, listen, Rick, if it was 58 up here,
we'd be walking around in flip flops.
I'm telling you, the golf courses would be packed.
Oh my God, yes! And then the people who are visiting from Florida would be out there in their snuggies with their hot cocoa, like, you people are crazy.
It was kind of weird, Heather, because I was working at Fox. I did the morning show that whole week, and I finished up, at about 10:30 or so, and it was like 55, 56 degrees. And I'm getting out of my car, and I'm saying to myself, I don't want it to be this warm on the 31st of December when I'm ready to get on a plane going down to Florida. You kind of want to leave like 7 below wind chill and 30-mile-per-hour winds, and it turned out to be a fairly nice day, but I had done some checking, and I think we hadn't seen a thunderstorm in Chicago on December 31st in over 50 years, so that was quite a rare event indeed.
I loved it.
And one of the things you told me, though, before when I contacted you last week, it wasn't on the show, but before, you said, don't worry, I'm leaving town, but nothing's going to happen this week in terms of the weather. And you are absolutely right. Aside from, how is it sunny today or partly sunny, nothing, it's been really a boring week.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because when we had the snow the other day on Thursday, that was the first snow event we had in 12 days. So we had that little late December, early January, reprieve of any type of harsh weather. But trust me, we'll get back into it very, very quickly. Probably by Tuesday, I see some snow coming back in here. And then again, Friday and Saturday. And now I was just looking at some longer range models for next week, and we could actually be under the gun for some significant snow on here on Sunday. That'll be kind of interesting if the Packers end up doing what they're supposed to do and end up playing the Bears. That'll be quite an interesting game playing in snow and wind.
And how much would you say would be coming down then? Because
I'm thinking, Mike, we're going to probably see about 2 to 4 inches maybe Tuesday, another 1 to 3 Friday, and maybe another 3 to 6 on Sunday. Now this is all very speculative; it's kind of out in the distance there. But the pattern definitely becomes a much, much more active as far as producing not significant snow events, but definitely minor snow events between now and next week. So we had a little break, and now we're getting back into the snow.
I'm glad, actually, because I think a nice layer of snow is good. It's good for the plants. When we had that warm-up the other week, and I saw the rain come in, and then I saw the forecast and saw it was going to get cold, I said, oh, this is not good, because it just wipes away that wonderful cover for the plants.
Right.
It's
kind of weird seeing everything kind of brown around here on January 8th, isn't it? You want to see a little bit more snow on the ground. I agree with you, Mike.
Yeah. Although what was interesting was when the snow melted, there were still a lot of plants on the ground that were green. Because the snow had dumped quickly before everything got cold, and they were still doing stuff under the snow. And then now that the snow's gone, you can see they've completely wilted and dried up, and it's we're moving on into the dead of winter here.
Well, I have a question. You had mentioned before about tropical plants. I have a couple of a couple of tropical plants, some big palm trees. I think you've seen them in my place before. Am I giving them too much water, or am I not giving them enough light? What's the deal there?
You're probably both. It's typically what people tend to do with their plants in the winter is they here's what folks do in terms of watering. They set it on their schedule, not the plants.
Okay.
Once a week I'm going to water my plant, and that's because that's what I do. I water my plant once a week. Well, the problem is in the winter, as you know, with less light, the metabolism of the plant slows down. It can't absorb the water, and as a result, a lot of plants die because the water sits around the roots and they get root rot.
I got it. So less water then, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Ease up on the water. Ease, you know, probably don't need to fertilize at all.
Okay.
Just wait until the end of February, early March is when we start pulling out of that. When, as you know, as a meteorologist, when the light levels get much better.
Sure. Yeah. Now, how do I go about telling my neighbor that their Christmas wreath on their door stinks? I mean, it absolutely smells. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, it's probably eucalyptus is what I'm thinking. Is
probably.
It, is there eucalyptus in it?
I'm not sure, but when I walked down the hallway just about an hour ago, it almost smelled like someone had urinated on the floor. Then I got closer to the door, and I'm like, oh, my God, their Christmas wreath stinks.
Yeah.
I got a feeling. Yeah, I'm thinking it's eucalyptus.
Sure.
Yeah, eucalyptus.
If you get it wet on one that wasn't dried properly or isn't the finer quality of eucalyptus, it can have a down aroma.
So what you know, I don't know how you tell a neighbor that because a lot of people think that's a wonderful odor. So
well, freshly eucalyptus done right is a wonderful odor.
Right, but this is bad. It's bad.
Well, then maybe you need to say something.
So, like, your door stinks?
Maybe. What you do is you go buy a new cut, fresh, beautiful wreath at one of our glorious sponsors, and that smells gorgeous, made out of, like, you know, lavender or whatever. Slap that on the door.
You offer it up and say,
you
yeah.
just switch it.
Hey, you just say,
and let them know, or don't let them know. It was just the wreath fairy came.
You don't say it's a holiday wreath. You say, it's a winter wreath.
Yeah. You're a weather person. Be like, this is your winter solstice, whatever.
And I changed the note to past tense, saying that your wreath stunk.
actually stank, yeah. But it stank. As
with
you know,
nice
as the Grinch told us.
Card and point them towards you know one of our glorious sponsors.
You know,
you just get non-stinky wreaths.
Well, I need to get Jerry Edelman's holding, and I want to get back to him, and I'm going to apologize right here because I was the one that got the number wrong, which I cannot believe. But
you have to. Plead human. It happens.
You know, but he's. And we're going to get to him, and I want to get to your forecast. But the one of the things I have a problem. One of my latest pet peeves is that people have lost track of certain words in our vocabulary. They don't think they exist. Like stank. There is a word stank.
Really?
Yeah. You know, people go right to stunk. I don't know why that is.
I actually used stank on Facebook this morning.
Thank you.
I did.
Stank. Wow.
Oh,
stank.
I thought you said I stank on Facebook.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I went out on an excursion last night, and there was an unpleasant aroma lingering in my hair. And, like, yeah, they were like, what did it smell like on Facebook? Because I said, if I wasn't at this one establishment.
So this is what you're doing when I'm trying to get a hold of Jerry. You're on Facebook,
right? No, this is when I first got out and I was brewing the coffee.
All right.
But
well,
I used stank.
Let's get to the forecast. What do we got this week, Rick?
Well, obviously a lot of sunshine today. But you know what? All the cold air that was blowing over Lake Michigan produced amazing amounts of lake effect snow. I talked about this last night when I was on Fox News. And I'll be on again this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Doing the 9 o'clock show with Bob and Robin, so that'd be kind of fun.
Great.
Yeah, but 36 inches on the ground, believe it or not, 36 in St. Joe, Michigan, 28 in South Bend, about 20 in Berrien. The further west you go, about 11 in LaPorte, about 6 on the ground in Chester, and about 2 in Valparaiso. So this was a highly localized event that lasted for about 48 hours, and really, when you think about it, 1 inch an hour for 48 hours with a lot of settling, you can easily get 36 inches out of this. So a lot of lake effect snow for us. Sunshine today, high 26. We'll see some clouds increase late tomorrow afternoon. I'm thinking the best chance of any snow, Mike, is going to generally be on a line for about the Quad Cities to Peoria to just north of Indianapolis, maybe about 3 to 6 inches in central Illinois and central Indiana, maybe 2 to 4 here in Chicago. This is going to be primarily a Tuesday to early Wednesday event. Then we get a break Wednesday, Thursday into Friday. More snow late Friday, Saturday, maybe a couple of inches, and then more significant snow on Sunday. But the overall pattern remains very cold. I shouldn't say very cold, but moderately cold, and also quite a bit snowy around here for probably the next 2.5 weeks. And most people thought we were going to get into a mild January once we got past the cold December. But that's not happening. So
good.
We're a little bit ahead of the game as far as snowfall is concerned, and we'll definitely increase those totals by the end of the week, Mike.
All right. Rick DeMille Weather, you can find him on Fox News Chicago. He's going to be there at the end of the week. And also at DeMille Weather.
No, not the end of the week. And first off, get it right. It's Fox Chicago News.
Oh, dear.
And I'll be on tomorrow night, Monday night through Saturday, with Bob and Robin, not Bob and Marianne. So get that right as well. You get a nasty email from Robin Robinson. I don't want you to get that.
She doesn't listen. She doesn't what?
I loved it. Her maiden name was Brantley, because I remember when that network started and she was one of their first anchors. And then when she got married and her name became Robin Robinson, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Yeah, I was like, you already had a TV-friendly name. Now it's just catchy.
Right,
TV-friendly name.
And Heather's looking for a guy named Heatherson. So.
No. Weatherson or Leatherson or
Fox,
I don't know.
Chicago News, is that it?
That's right, yeah.
Fox Chicago News. All week with Rick DeMille, or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, or DeMilleWeather.com.
There you go.
Oh, boy. All right, I'll talk to you next.
We got all the dots and T's and I's crossed.
Lovely. Talk to you next week.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you've got a real tree this year, don't let it end up in a landfill. It's easy to recycle or reuse. The branches of a Christmas tree can be chipped or shredded and used as mulch in the yard or placed in the compost pile. Obviously, the finer you chop it up, the faster it will decompose in the spring. Of course, if you don't want to chop it up yourself, your city will probably do it for you. In Chicago, go to cityofchicago.org/environment or go to my website, MikeNovak.net. On the homepage, I have links to where you can recycle your Christmas trees and to where you can recycle your Christmas lights. Don't let those end up in a landfill either. Now, branches from the tree can be used to cover plants to help protect them from the cold and wind and to keep the soil temperature even. Finally, never burn your Christmas tree or any fresh conifer wood in a fireplace or wood stove. The trees have a lot of sap, which when burned turns into creosote that can coat the inside of your chimney and possibly lead to a chimney fire. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. In 30 seconds, we talk to Jerry Edelman from Openlands.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Nature's waiting you, something's wrong.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I go to line two and offer my sincerest apologies, Mr. Edelman.
No problem, Mike. Nice to be with you.
It's good to be with you. Jerry Edelman, who's the president and CEO of Openlands, and if you know anything about Openlands, you know that they're involved in many fabulous activities in and around Chicago, land preservation, greenways, community greening, tree keepers. I am tree keeper number 417, Mr. Edelman.
Hey, fantastic. Oh. You know, you're now up to 1,200. It's a remarkable program, and actually this year it'll be the 20th anniversary of Tree Keepers.
Oh, that's great. We'll have to do a special celebration.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. It's become a model, really, around the country and even other parts of the world, you know, getting citizens involved in caring for the urban forest, and you know firsthand.
Yeah, well, basically, people who want to know something about trees go to a class, and I don't remember how many weeks it is now.
It's 7 classes, 3 hours each. It's a pretty serious commitment, and, you know, top professionals in the field, scientists and tree care professionals, as you know, are the teachers, volunteers, an amazing commitment in their part.
And you know that, I mean, you just heard the commercial for the Care of Trees. They're
right,
one of the people that's involved in that. And, you learn everything from tree identification to pruning. And to a lot of people, pruning is not a science. It's magic. you know.
One of the things we're hoping, too, is that what it has done is really connected people to the important role that trees play in the city, that they become ambassadors for that urban forest. And now with a new mayor, you know, looming, we want to make sure that the commitment is still there and that people value and understand, you know, the multiple benefits that trees in the city bring us.
Well, that launches us into the discussion I had earlier with Howard Lerner from ELPC about the Green Growth Platform, which, and of course you were one of the people that helped put this together, and rightly so, because Open Lands, like the Environmental Law and Policy Center, is a regional organization, not so much City of Chicago, although it centers around the City of Chicago.
Right. We cover a three-state metro area, and, you know, you kind of look at the metropolitan footprint, you know, it's much bigger even than just the six counties or seven counties in northeastern Illinois that we typically focus on. But at the heart of this great metropolitan area is the City of Chicago. And so obviously, you know, its future and the leadership role that it provides and the kind of image that it has is so key to, you know, the future of this global metropolitan area.
Well, Howard says he's optimistic that the new mayor is going to come in and have environmental issues in mind as policy, regardless of who it is, and he ticked off how each of the candidates, the major candidates at this point, have been involved in environmental activities of one sort or another. Problem is, you can talk a good game. I mean, even if these people in the past have participated, and a number of them have participated teamed with great organizations, but we're in a huge debt in the City of Chicago, suffering from a huge debt, and it seems to me that one of the first things to go are the environmental initiatives. Does that bother you at all?
It does, and because I think often they're dismissed as sort of the icing on the cake, or, you know, if we have the luxury of addressing all the other issues that we have, jobs and education and crime and, you know, economic development, that then we can focus on the environment. Whereas I would argue that you can't focus on any of those things unless you have a sustainable and healthy environment. And that includes, you know, urban parks and public open space that contribute in such significant ways to, you know, improved community life and sense of place, healthy lifestyles, and to the economy. You know, look at Millennium Park. I mean, that's a rather dramatic example. You know, at one end of the spectrum, obviously, this world-class new public open space that set really new global standards. But the millions of dollars that that brings in every year to the city in revenues, you know, in terms of retail, restaurants, tourism, you know, hotels, and so forth. But in lesser ways, less dramatic ways, I should say, not lesser ways, that every community, I mean, having wonderful parks and green campuses around the schools and, you know, opportunities for recreation outdoors, you know, those are essentials. And so the challenge for the new mayor is to be creative and figure out how to integrate that into a more holistic agenda and think, again, creatively about resources. You know, what can we tap? You know, new federal programs that might be out there, private sector support, partnerships with developers and community groups and not-for-profits. And but we can't let it, you know, kind of drop from the list of important issues that we have to face as a city.
Yeah, that question was basically asked at the news conference at the ELPC on Thursday, and I lamely attempted to address it.
I thought you did a great job.
Well, you know, but I left the room, and later on I went home and I went, ow, what I should have said was, you know, and I have to admit, I get tense when people say, well, you know, environment, that's second tier. And it's not when you're talking about clean air and clean water and food, local food, and the health of your citizens and energy retrofitting. How is that second tier?
Yeah, and it's also competitiveness. I mean, today, large cities like Chicago are competing with other metropolitan areas around the world. And this thing of image, brand, you know, quality of life, whatever those labels are, so important. How is the city perceived? Do people want to live and work there? Do corporations want to have their headquarters there? Can they attract the high-level personnel? So it works at many levels, but including that highest level of economic competitiveness, I think. And Chicago, under Mayor Daley, really has emerged as a great global city. And, you know, I would argue that one of the key ingredients or dimensions of that has been his focus on parks and greening and open spaces and beautification, which also contributes in very substantial ways to the things that you just outlined in terms of those basic needs and, you know, of human life, healthy environment and clean air and water and the opportunities to recreate close to home.
Mm-hmm.
So these are essentials.
Well, we're basically out of time, but one of the things I want to do, Jerry, I'm wondering if you would, let's talk about this. I would love to have you in studio and talk about all the great things that Open Lands does. In particular, I'm kind of interested in talking about the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve, which used to be the old Fort Sheridan up there. And would you come down to the studio sometime and talk to me?
Of course, anytime.
And if you
want,
great. We're going to set that up. And if you want the questions, the 20 questions for Chicago's mayoral candidates, the Green Growth Platform. One of the places you can go is openlands.org.
Exactly.
And it's all right there on the website. And Jerry Adelman, president and CEO of Open Lands, we will talk again. And I'm going to have you down here, and we'll go on at length.
I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much,
Have
Jerry.
Have a good day. Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. Second hour of the show, more environmental, but food issues, talking about local food and the trials and tribulations. Remember a year ago that the shared kitchen had all that food destroyed? Well, we're kind of doing a follow-up to that with Zena Murray from Logan Square Kitchen, and she will be here to talk about that. Mr. Brown Thumb is on later, and we'll talk about One Seed Chicago, which seed you should vote for. I've got mine in mind, and I'm going to try to stuff the ballot box. I have a radio show. I can do things like that. All right, stick around. CNN News is next. We'll be back after 10.
The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Waitress, please, I've had enough, Lord, I can't believe what I see. How could you be alone? You can sit right here beside me, girl, and make yourself at home. I've been to Memphis.
Sometimes I think the only reason I do this radio show is so I can play music. You know, when I was in college, I thought I was going to be a rock and roll DJ.
That's what I did.
Well,
that's what I thought.
You know, there's... no, there's... I don't know.
I have the soul of a rocker. But
there's very little rock and roll DJing going on anymore. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
And if... A lot of it's just automated. You sit in a room.
It's formatted and it's
by
voice
yourself,
tracked.
And you do it all at once, and then it's recorded, and then your voice comes over.
It's just not the same.
No.
Mm-mm.
Not when I was in college.
Mm-mm.
Playing records, spinning the discs.
I got lucky and saw the death rattle. I got in at like the last thing. In the college radio, you can still play the music and have the fun and be, you know, old school, if you will. But I saw just as the real main radio station started making the transition... I got in at the end, and I got to see some of the masters at work.
See, you...
Yeah.
I can tell you stories.
Oh, I know.
But
one day you will.
Some of them are like that, and some of them are not. But see, this is your timing, Heather, in your life, getting into a dying industry.
It's a changing industry.
Yeah,
I don't
it's a
think
changing
it's dying,
industry.
And I don't think traditional radio will ever go anywhere. And then I think if there is like the big ever Y2K-ish disaster and the technology crumbles, it'll come back.
It's true.
It's true.
Because all you need are tubes and diodes.
Yeah, and it shoots through the air.
Transistors.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, tomato, tomato, I guess, in that regard. But I think with, I mean, look what you do. You're on the radio, you're streaming, you're tweeting, you're Facebooking. You've taken, you can download us into your iPod and take us wherever you want to go.
It's true. And I'm glad you said that, because I want to remind people as we start a new year that all of those things are available. Have we been getting tweets today?
Not so many. They're coming later. We got one for coming up for Mr. Brown Thumb, another one.
You know, of course, you realize that's why I have Mr. Brown Thumb on the show, because my ratings go up.
He sets Twitter ablaze.
That's right.
How many hits do you get on the site when he's on?
Oh, I get lots.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just using him. But he's using me too, so.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Scratching back.
That's right. Yeah. But you can always tweet us. My handle is at Mike Now, MikeNow. And the reason it's Mike Now, which actually I kind of like, if I had to start my radio business all over again, I might just call myself Mike Now.
It's just Mike Now.
Mike Now. He's
Mike
here.
Now.
He's there. He's live.
Mike Now on the Mike Now.
He's on the radio.
We're going to do something with that.
Mike Now.
Mike Now.
But the reason I had to use it is because somebody took Mike Novak. All right. It's like, how can you do this?
Well, I'm sure Michael's, that's not an unheard of name. Novak can't be. It's not Smith, but it's
Oh,
not,
no, no. Believe me. There are so many. Novaks, are you kidding me?
And then for, like, in Michigan, there's, like, bajillions of you.
I know. And there's the N-O-V-A-Ks and the N-O-W-A. See, what I need to do, I need to gather up all those domain names. And I've got to get Mike N-O-V-A-K and N-O-W-A-K and .com and .net and then N-O-V-A-C-K and then N-O, you know.
O-C-K, Novak.
Right. Nobody knows how to spell the dark. Well, you know, I was talking to Mike Sanders last week, the host of Our Town right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk. He says, nobody can spell Sanders. So if you can't spell Sanders, can you imagine trying to spell Novak?
My last name is Fry. And I've been Heather Frey at every award I've ever won, every reservation I've ever held.
But that's the pronunciation, right?
No.
But it's F-R-E-Y.
Yeah, it looks like F-R-E-Y, yes. But Jim Frey of the Cubs spells it the same way. They don't mess up his. And Glenn Frey of the Eagles spells it the same way. And they don't mess up his either, but they mess up mine.
Okay, I tell you, if you end up coaching the Cubs...
Or
producing one of the best-selling...
I'd rather sail the Titanic.
One of the best-selling albums of all time, then you won't have that problem.
Okay, yeah.
But being the...
But I'm the producer for the Mike Nowak Show.
I'm turning off your mic now. Uh-oh. Mike Sanders, also in the room. Yes, sir, Mr. Sanders.
That's revenge for calling my son a Petri dish last week.
I'm sorry. I just had to chime in when Heather was going in her diva moment there. So.
Did I really have a diva moment?
It was not really. It wasn't genuine.
Okay.
You can tell she hasn't been on the radio in a couple of weeks because it's all this pent-up energy.
This is my 2011, my debut.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening, and I'm like, yeah, I don't understand how Sanders can be misconstrued. Sanders, not Saunders. Not Saunderson, Sanders.
S-A-N-D-E-R-S.
Stanley Steamers, Sanders. It's like Sanders. That's it. That's all. I get cards from people. It's Sanderson, Saunders. I'm like, I don't understand what that is. It sounds better, but Sanders is just, you know, it's Joe Sanders. It doesn't mean anything. So that's all. I just wanted to chime in because we were talking about nothing.
talking about radio. And
no, I'm just having fun with. Well, because your guest is here.
I know my guest is enjoying herself.
I'm sorry. Could you introduce yourself, please? What's your name?
I'm Zena Murray from Logan Square Kitchen.
Is that Murrayson?
Well, people, because I have a bad Michigan accent, people think I'm saying Zena Marie, M-A-R-I-E, when Murray is actually my last name.
Where in Michigan are you from?
I grew up in the Detroit area.
Where?
In Farmington Hills.
Oh, that's not Detroit.
He's from Warren.
I'm from Warren. That's more Detroit.
I lived in
Warren. Did you really?
Mm-hmm. At 12 and Hoover.
Are you kidding me? I was at 11 and Ryan. How about that? 11 Mile Road, 12 Mile Road,
okay.
That's what we're talking.
Okay.
You know, you've heard of Eminem, 8 Mile Road, but we were up in the Burb Mile Roads.
My one trip to Detroit, when I passed 8 Mile, my friend who really, really loves Eminem, I texted him, I'm like, just passed 8 Mile. He thought I was so cool.
The east side of Detroit had a lot of Polish folks, and my grandmother on my mom's side is actually a Novak.
Is she really? With a V or a
V.
W? What?
With a V.
Okay. Well, see, we... I was born in Detroit. I had Beth Botza kind of bust me the other week when I put that my hometown was Madison Heights, Michigan. because that's where my formative years were. But I was actually born in Detroit, and then after
in the city of Detroit,
and then after I got out of college, I moved into the city of Detroit, and that was three exciting years, I can tell you. Back in the mid 70s, woo!
I drove through downtown Detroit.
Oh. Oh, go ahead.
In like 4 or 5 years ago, very briefly. You're like, you see it? Yep, good. We're out. We turned around and left.
I have to tell you that a friend of mine sent me this amazing collection of photographs that a couple of guys, and I think they're French, shot in Detroit over the last few years, and they went indoors into all of these different decaying buildings where it looks like the Flying Dutchman. I mean, we've seen the photos of the blocks and blocks of vacant land where there's more pheasants than there are people.
And the feral houses, overgrowth that like has swallowed whole buildings.
Right, that's one thing. These two guys went into some of the great old theaters and office buildings, and it looks as though Armageddon happened and people ran out without collecting anything because chandeliers, papers, the chairs, you know, half-eaten meals, schools that were just, it looks like the city fled. And
you got to put that on the site. That
I've
sounds
got to get that
beautiful and tragic.
Oh, it's tragic. It's terribly tragic. And I need to find that. I have no idea where I put it in any of these folders, but wait a second. Let me just check before we entertain the folks.
Well, as you're talking about that, it reminds me of a lot of wonderful salvage that, you know, we found in places that were being renovated or torn down around the city while we were under construction at Logan Square Kitchen. And as Mike saw last week when he came by, we have all sorts of beautiful decorative ironwork and old doors and beautiful architectural details that came out of places that were torn down or gutted. And we took that stuff that was all on its way to landfill and we've turned it into something really beautiful.
I love that. That's awesome.
And we'll get to that in a second. The name of the book is Detroit in Ruins, The Photographs of Yves Marchand and Romain Meffre. M-E-F-F-R-E, Y-V-E-S, Yves Marchand, M-A-R-C-H-A-N-D. But look for Detroit in Ruins. And the article was in The Observer from the UK. And they had all these just disturbing photographs. And that's my hometown. You know, and I know a lot of people have talked about it. This is nothing new. And Detroit may find its way back in terms of urban agriculture, which is kind of interesting and odd, given that it was the industrial capital of the world as recently as 1950s, which is not that
long ago,
and not that short a time anymore either. I mean, we're talking 50 years.
Automotive and steel and rail, and it all came through.
And as I was growing up there, I was watching it decline. You know, I grew up in Detroit as it declined, and maybe it's my fault because I was, you know, I'll blame myself for it. But
way to fall on the sword there, Mike.
Exactly.
You
for Detroit.
Single-handedly brought down the American automotive industry.
I did. I don't know how I did it. I just know this is what happens when you grow up Catholic. but we have Zena Murray in the studio here, and
how do we follow that?
I don't know. You could pull the mic down just a tad there. That's how you.
I'm looking at the photos though from the link on your website of Logan Square Kitchen. It's gorgeous.
Oh, you've got to go.
It's beautiful.
I was there, and I'm sorry to say, for the first time this past Wednesday, when mayoral candidate Miguel Devalier stopped in, and you had this conference of folks who not just shared use kitchen people, but urban ag people and community activists, and they all sat in a room, and there must have been about 30, and just, you know, didn't let them have it, but just said, these are our concerns about what's going on in the city of Chicago right now. Let's start with your concern. And by the way, Miguel Devalier, to his credit, didn't speak much. He listened, mostly. And then he was asked to speak, so he spoke. But the point was that the city of Chicago has a lot of ordinances and departments that are just catching up to the way the world is changing. in terms of urban agriculture and shared use facilities. And that's created some heartaches for you in the past couple of years with the Logan Square Kitchen, hasn't it, Zena?
Yeah, well, innovators are always going to be the folks that blaze a trail. Somebody said, I think Bill Curtis from Grass-Fed Beef said once, you know, if you're going to be a pioneer, you're going to end up with a few arrows in your back.
Mm-hmm.
And when shared-use kitchens first started operating, there still isn't today an ordinance that actually licenses the users of it. And so we're in a gray area where we've got this new type of business activity and licensing is, you know, working to catch up with it.
If you want to understand, and there's no way we can go through all of this and make sense of it, we'll do our best in a short time that we have here on the radio. But I urge you to go to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. And you haven't seen this yet, but the headline I put for this segment is, "You think your life is hard? Try running a shared kitchen." All right? And about halfway down, there's a line that says, you only need look at this story about Logan Square Kitchen owner Zena Murray in the October 2010 Chicago Reader. And it links to the Chicago Reader story that came out in October, which pretty much outlines, I thought they did a pretty good job of analyzing the problems and the things you went through. Because you thought you were going to put this together, and you're one of, what, three shared-use kitchens in the city?
Correct, and we're the only LEED Gold-certified kitchen and event space in the whole city.
Mm-hmm. And the scary part is, you know, you have to have inspectors come out, and you went through, jumped through hoops of fire when you were putting the thing together and what the use of the facility was going to be and how you were going to make a gold certified LEED and all this stuff, and everything seemed to be going well. And then the thing that tripped you up, and this seems impossible to believe, is that an inspector showed up. And you didn't have tables set up in the space, and that sounds like that kind of queered the deal right there, that they misunderstood everything from that point on.
Well, sometimes you just don't get the secret handshake before you're going to shake hands with someone. And there is a requirement when someone comes out to inspect your place when you've applied for a liquor license, which we had, where your furniture in your dining room has to exactly match a layout of a floor plan that you have posted on your wall. And if your furniture doesn't match exactly, you're not going to pass your inspection. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't aware. And we have a private event space in the front of our shared kitchen. And for people that don't know what a shared kitchen is, it's really a kitchen that's made available to small food entrepreneurs on an hourly basis. So people can come and start a food business in a legal kitchen before they long could afford a big hoods and equipment of their own. And we have an event space in the front that actually supports and subsidizes, keeps the rents approachable for the folks in the kitchen. So our event space is a flexible private event space, and the layout of that room changes with whatever event or corporate meeting is taking place. So because we have this flexible situation in our dining room, our furniture is not static.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm to this day kind of blown away that you could actually lose your life savings and your family's financial well-being because someone, you know, failed your furniture inspection. It still baffles me, you know, because I know I'm not going to be the last person, and I'm certainly probably not the first person that's had this experience.
So you were working on the space. It's not technically a restaurant, I mean, but there's no provision in the city code for shared use kitchen because there's only three of them in the city of Chicago. So you got the license as a restaurant. You were seeking the liquor license, and there's the kitchen in the back and the space in the front. City inspector shows up, sees no tables and chairs there, says, "Well, this isn't a restaurant. This is a banquet hall. And if you're a banquet hall, you need parking. We can't give you the license unless you have parking." Well, there's a couple things wrong with that. First of all, the neighborhood you're in my neighborhood, Logan Square, on Milwaukee, try to find parking on Milwaukee Avenue, okay, or a place that you can set that up. And B, we should be discouraging people from driving instead of encouraging them, regardless of what the space is like. Why? And it's an area that's within walking distance of a major L line, and good buses. You got Fullerton, you got Milwaukee buses, you've got the Blue Line. So why are we dealing with parking in the first place? But those are the rules. So you have an inspector come in, says, no, it's not a banquet hall. Well, what happened after that?
Well, at that point, we began this long, arduous, I would say probably 15 or 16 months of trying to get the city officials to just keep the original ruling that they gave us. I mean, when this inspector came in and failed us on our furniture, we had gotten approvals from the zoning department on two earlier occasions before we designed our building and before we built it, classifying us. And we had said all along we're a shared-use kitchen and an event space. And so they gave us our permissions, told us we would have no parking requirement. At that point, we went and borrowed the big pile of money from the bank and built our space out. And only after we have that mortgage are we told, oh, wait a minute, what you said you were isn't really exactly what we think you are now. So we've spent 15 months just trying to get the city to keep its original word to us. And quite honestly, this is what happens to everyone who tries to interact with the city, where you get a different person each time that has a different perspective and changes, you know, the city's position, and you're sort of whipsawed around. And in the meantime, you're, you know, paying a mortgage every month, you're paying your insurance premiums every month, you're trying to operate, you're trying to get some revenue going, and you just get dropped in a kind of a deep hole.
That's Zena Murray, who's I guess literally chief cook and bottle washer. I've always wanted to say that.
That's, and actually mean it.
What?
And actually mean it.
Yes, exactly. For Logan Square Kitchen. By the way, if you got a question about any of this, 773-838-9278, give us a holler. We'd be happy. Or comment about how things are changing. And one of the things, obviously, that you want to do is make sure that the next mayor, whoever that is, has a better understanding of how all these city departments, as I said earlier, bump into each other, sometimes accidentally and sometimes a little more maliciously, I think. I mean, one of the things that candidate Del Valle said at the meeting was that there's a lot of good people who work for the city of Chicago and really want to do the right thing. And sometimes it's impossible to do the right thing, especially when the ordinances are not clear about what kind of operation you have.
Well, and I was in a meeting in City Hall this past week with people from the licensing department and Alderman Gene Schulter's office as we are giving input to the new license for shared kitchen users. And it's really clear to me that these folks were not free to have an honest, frank discussion about what we think the best approach is. I feel like they are, you know, we're allowed to give our feedback and then they take it into a different room with the law department and, you know, other folks, and they have their meeting and then they come back. And it's a very, it's really, I said this in the meeting last week, I said it's really a shame that we can't just sit around and talk to each other as human beings. We all love the city, and I think when you love a place, you know, you want to make it better. And being critical is actually a sign that you really care and you want to leave the campground better than you found it.
It just leads to so many things. One of the things you said at the meeting, and I hope you don't mind that I'm mentioning this, is that often when you call the city, you'll write to the city of Chicago, you write to a certain person in a certain department, they won't write back. They'll call back. And you know why that is, because they don't want to have anything on paper. They don't want to have a paper trail. Well, what kind of accountability is that? If you cannot even get somebody to answer a simple question in a simple message.
Well, you're hitting on something that I think is the core of this whole circumstance is, I think it's a wonderful goal that Mayor Daley set out to have an accountable government. But that only happens if people that are going to stand up and raise their hand and say, yeah, that was my decision, or I took that action, are only going to do that if they get rewarded or celebrated for it. And the city is in a place where if you poke your head out and say, yeah, that was me, chances are you're not going to experience a great consequence for being a stand-up person and taking risk. It's a very fearful culture. And I can tell you that when we were first being told we had a parking requirement, my question to the person from the zoning department who told me that, I said, well, how many parking spaces am I going to need? And they said, well, you're going to have to talk to the zoning administrator to get that answer. Now, that's the top person in the whole department. And I'm a small business asking what I thought was a relatively minor question. But what happens is that decisions get pushed upstream, even relatively minor ones, and accountability gets pushed to the citizen because everyone inside those departments is Clerk Del Valle's point earlier last week. They're in a place where they're handcuffed. They can't do their job. Even the good people aren't free to do a good job. So accountability gets pushed down to me where if there's a mistake that happens, it must be mine.
And you're the, you know, and one of the things that this does is it really puts impediments in the way of small businesses. Big businesses can usually hurdle over there. They've got their legal staffs. They've got the time to buy. They've got the deep pockets. But when you're starting out in a place like this, and you're doing such good, you've got a gold certified LEED building there. You're providing opportunities for entrepreneurs to come in and start their own businesses. Are you able to keep the business running at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, we're in a hole, and we're certainly, you know, between the economy and the difficulties with the city and a lot of other things, it's not easy, but there's no way I'm giving up. I mean, we have a handful of amazing food artisans that call the Logan Square Kitchen home, and they do incredible work. I watched some women build a Steinway piano cake this week with every bit of detail on it that is, and we're going to have it up on our Facebook page this week, but it probably weighs 40 or 50 pounds, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, you talk about the craftsmanship in these old buildings, and then I think a lot about our food artisans in our place and the kinds of things they make. But I thought, I was so naive in the beginning because I thought the Logan Square Kitchen as a kitchen and an event space could revitalize all sorts of neighborhoods because everybody eats every day. And I really was naive thinking, oh, the city will love this idea. It's a green business. It's a green building. It helps the economy, the environment, and the food system at the same time. What's not to love about this? And mm-hmm. I never for one minute thought that I would run into any obstacles in City Hall. And I've, you know, all of my many attorneys that I've talked to over the last couple of years have just kind of sadly nod and look at me and say, yeah, well, you know, you just didn't know what you were in for.
That is sad.
That kind of happens when you're a pioneer of something, though.
I guess so.
Now, the irony is, fighting this fight, the communities will get better, and people will do it because these spaces will be more readily available.
And I have to say that when we went to the Zoning Board of Appeals, when we finally were permitted to go, and that was, you know, thanks to our counsel, you know, finally got us a seat at the table and got our due process back. We had 30 or 40 people come and give up a morning and sit with us. We had 275 letters of support. I mean, the community rose up and said, this is a business that we want, and we're here giving up our time to stand up and say, this is what we want. And the reason that I invited Miguel Del Valle, and I'm continuing to invite mayoral candidates to our space, is because I really want the next innovator to have an easier time. I really want, you know, politicians are always standing up and saying, you know, the entrepreneur is going to save us. We need new green jobs. Well, okay, I'm one of those people doing that heavy lifting, and I'm not even asking for money or anybody to change the codes or anything like that. I'm just asking for you to, you know, don't throw a refrigerator on my back when I'm trying to run up a mountain.
At least they're not coming in and destroying your food at this point, right? Or have they?
No, and let me just say
and,
that.
And I mean, and that's an alluding to the whole thing that happened at Chicago.
At Kitchen Chicago.
Kitchen Chicago last year that I reported on the show a couple of times, where the food inspectors came in and destroyed food, and it just seemed unnecessary, and it was because of more confusion, which has been straightened out a little bit in terms of the licensing for a business. If you work at a shared kitchen, and you know, at the time they said there was a was so confusing. You were supposed to get your own license, but if you're working in a shared kitchen, they already had a license, and so it caused all kinds of problems, didn't it?
Well, right now there's one food license in the city code. It's called a food retail establishment license. And so it licenses an establishment, a premise, a physical address. In the ordinance, the definition of an establishment is a physical structure. So when Kitchen Chicago first started 6 years ago, they got a food retail establishment license. And then when their clients would try to get a license, the licensing, you know, folks would say, well, there's already a license at that premise. The premise is licensed. We don't issue a second license at the same address. And so for many years, Kitchen Chicago operated. And actually, before Logan Square Kitchen opened up, the summer prior to our opening, we went to the licensing department and said, we're going to operate a shared kitchen. Tell us how we should be licensed. Tell us how our clients should be licensed. And the verbal direction we received was, you, Logan Square Kitchen, get a food retail establishment license. All of your clients will work under your license. If anybody gets sick, if there's any issues with any food safety, it's on you. You are taking responsibility for everything that happens in your kitchen. And I said, I am happy to do that.
I'm
happy to do that. I'll have an agreement with my clients that says, here's how we're going to handle liability between the kitchen user and the kitchen, and I'm happy not to have the government in our relationship. I'll go ahead and take responsibility for that. And the other thing that's interesting about this is Kitchen Chicago operated for 6 years. There was never any foodborne illness outbreaks you heard about. I mean, we get this flag of public health and public safety waved all the time. But the fact of the matter is that when you have a business owner that's the only employee of a business standing over their livelihood, you have a commitment level and a quality, and that person's been trained in food safety and sanitation. They're insured. They're working in a kitchen that has insurance and sanitation personnel. So you have actually more certified people than you do in most of the restaurants that you walk into.
Well, that's the myth, that the little guys are dangerous because they're not paying attention. It's the big guys that are dangerous because they don't always have the qualified staff and they're not always paying attention.
And when you have a really big operation, you have more what are called critical control points in food safety. And so you end up having more potential difficulties at each of those breaks. And when you're in a small kitchen, and it's funny, when the state comes in and they look at somebody who makes, for example, ice cream in our place, dairy operations have to be licensed by the state of Illinois. But when they look at our quote-unquote ice cream manufacturers, they really look at that as, oh, you guys, this is just homemade. This is homemade, handmade stuff. You don't have warehousing operations. You don't have large batches that then sit before they're packaged. Things come out of the ice cream machine and they go into their package and they go in the freezer within about less than a minute. So it's a very different kind of place. And as more and more people can attest, when you taste something that's homemade and handmade and you're talking to the person who made it, That's a very magical experience, as we see in the markets that we hold in our space.
No. We do not allow magic, okay? It's got to be science, all right? We're talking science here, all right? No magic.
There's magic.
Well, and
especially
I'm happy
when you're eating good food, because there's this happiness that washes over you like,
yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Zena Murray. No, and that's Heather Fry was just speaking, but Zena Murray from Logan Square Kitchen is here. I'm going to have to take a short break, but there's a couple of things I want to get out, and one of which is that because of this and your size and because of the nature of your business, you get inspected a few more times each year than the average restaurant, don't you?
Yes. Restaurants, I think it's Category 1 in the health code, the highest risk, gets inspected once a year. We get inspected once a year for every single client that's in our facility. So I every time I have a new person get set up to work in our kitchen, we have a health inspection. And I'd say we get inspected every 3 or 4 weeks or so.
And that takes how long?
The inspector, the last inspection we had took about 2.5 or 3 hours.
And, of course, while they're inspecting, I'm assuming that nobody can be working.
Well, people can be working. You know, I have to be sort of available to that inspector. And what happens, and I think the health inspection piece is actually going to get fixed when the new shared kitchen user ordinance comes out.
And when is the when is that scheduled, and what's it going to do?
Well, what it will do is it will create a new license type for people who are in shared kitchens, so that they actually have a license they can apply for and receive that will be more reasonably priced than the big food retail establishment license that they're currently being required to apply for.
That was one of the items that came up at that meeting on Wednesday, that there's a one-size-fits-all mentality in the city. You have these tiny businesses that are paying the same fees as the very large ones in certain respects.
That's true, although food retail establishment license, for me, costs $660. They do go up in price the larger your facility gets.
Who was it that was talking about that? Do you remember?
Tracy Kellner, who's the owner of Provenance Food and Wine, has two locations in Logan Square and Lincoln Square for a gourmet food and wine shop. Mm-hmm. And she's paying the same licensing fees as a Binney's would, which is a much larger...
You think?
Facility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing that came up, and as I mentioned before, this was not just about shared-use kitchens. There were urban ag people and different kinds of people. Kevin Pierce from the Resource Center was there, and he talked about a very interesting problem that they've had with the city, and I've talked about it on the show. If you're doing gardening and farming in the city, you have to worry about lead levels in the soil and other contaminants. And so they've come up with a system where they cap the soil with a layer of clay. And apparently they've been using about 4 inches of clay to do this. Well, they went to the city and they were negotiating for a space with the city. And the city said, well, we want 3 feet. And there was no particular reason for it. It just that 3 feet sounds better than 4 inches, whether or not the science agrees with that. And that was, you know, it's that sort of arbitrariness that comes up in, you're looking skeptical.
No, not at all. I'm thinking about how, where does that kind of decision come from the inside of
City Hall?
I think
it's people covering their butt, basically.
But I think that what's happened is that the insurance liability is driving every single decision, and so there's this incredibly heavy-handed, we have to do this to be absolutely certain that we never, ever have any shred of a possibility of any unfortunate outcome. And so what ends up happening is that business activity and urban agriculture and the healing of food deserts and the rebuilding of our food system or our economy get strangled to death.
That is Zena Murray from Logan Square Kitchen. Hang on a second. Do you mind staying till the end of the hour? I don't know if you know Mr. Brown Thumb, but I'm bringing him on board.
I'm happy to be here. It's great being here with you guys.
Okay, because I also want to get your story, your personal story, which I think people will be very interested in. It's really quite remarkable, and I'd like to get a little time for that as well. But let's take care of this, and then we'll get to Mr. Brown Thumb as well. Now that you're looking at Christmas and New Year in your rear view mirror, like a squirrel that zigged when he should have zagged, you know what I'm talking about, it's time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks you've neglected, such as repotting the unruly houseplants that were temporary. You've never had that happen to you, Heather?
I have. I just can't believe you put it in a spot. I just see this poor squished squirrel in the road somewhere.
The problem with squirrels is they get so confused.
They,
you know,
do. Like, it's like they're thrill seekers or something. They're playing chicken.
They dash one way and then they go, way.
Abort mission. And then they get squashed or they run back to the tree and start it all over again.
You'd never catch a cat doing that.
Just a furry tree rat.
Just a good...
I'm sorry. I know they're cute. They are still rodents. They are still pests.
I love squirrels. All right.
That's why you squish them in your commercials.
I hope the SIDS people forgive me for that.
You should have just left me quiet laughing there.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, so you want to repot the unruly houseplants that were temporarily shoved into the furnace room when you made room for the Christmas tree, and boy, are they mad at you. Well, never fear. Sid's greenhouses can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant, and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Here's a tip. Don't put those tender plants near radiators or in the way of drafts during the winter. If you've been enjoying a lovely poinsettia for the last several weeks, you're in luck. Now through February 1st, you can trade in your poinsettia. That's a poinsettia, for those of you who are confused. You can trade in this plant and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. It's been pretty quiet out there. Cue crickets chirping and tumbleweeds tumbling. Too quiet, if you ask me. It's only a matter of time before one of those big winter storms comes rolling through the area. What would you do if one of your valuable trees took a hit? Here's something you should know. The Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service. Many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines. I wouldn't go near a tree that fell on a power line, or other trees. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years and shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Tweet of the day comes from My Skinny Garden. She posts... This is what she writes. She says, "My friend from Tampa posted on Facebook that she ran over a squirrel on her bicycle yesterday. Stupid squirrels." They are pretty dopey, aren't they?
I've never seen that. Now that I've never seen.
That would freak
but
me out.
If I ran over one on my bike, you bet it would. I feel guilty if I've never hit one with my car. I swerve. I'd prefer not to squish it.
Is that your bumper sticker? I swerve for squirrels.
I don't hit, go into oncoming traffic lanes or anything, but I will swerve. But I feel sad for them when I see them all smushed. But at the same token, it's like, stay in your tree.
Exactly.
Because they dart, they do, they be there.
And away from my crocus bulbs, okay? Please.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We're entering a new year, so this is a good time to look back at the work of some of the green service providers of the past year. Well, one in particular, WRD Environmental. Now, you've heard me talk about their involvement in green activities like Greentown, the future of community at the College of Lake County in Grays Lake, Illinois. That happened last March. They sponsored the 6th annual Chicago River Summit in June, hosted by Friends of the Chicago River. and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Speaking of the river, WRD Environmental has been instrumental in developing and maintaining the award-winning and innovative Fish Hotel in the Chicago River for 2 years. And that's not all. WRD Environmental was part of the South Pond Rehabilitation Team, which transformed that part of Lincoln Park from a tired, polluted mud hole into a vibrant showplace for a rebounding ecosystem. And WRD was one of the main sponsors for Mayor Daley's Landscape Awards ceremony. Won't be Mayor Daley's next year, but they'll be part, WRD will be sponsoring it, I'm sure, which celebrates gardening all over the city. You can be sure that WRD is going to be a driving force behind those kinds of initiatives for 2011. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com. Zena, I'm glad to see you were rocking out on that.
From Detroit, what do you want?
That's true. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And Heather, of course, as always, is rocking out on it. I guess we need to go. It's the Good Growing segment on the Mike Novak Show, back after a short hiatus for the holidays. And basically the reason is, you know, who wants to be on the radio on a holiday? And except for Mr. Brown Thumb.
People who aren't on the radio at all.
Good point.
I'll take a holiday show, and I'm fine with it. I don't have a radio show.
You have everything else going for you, Mr. BT. I mean, I was looking at your blog site, and you claim you've had 500,000 hits from all over the planet, so that's not too bad.
There's heckling threats on Twitter.
Oh, that's true.
Tweeted heckling threats. That's what I was trying to
say. Yeah, you've been threatened with heckling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my skinny garden?
Yes.
Exactly.
Who had the friend who ran over the squirrel, the poor thing, and then Snappy J Dog on Twitter read the post, and so did C. Vanderlinden, and they were all laughing about the squirrels.
I'll tell you what, if you got a good squirrel story, call me, 773-838-9278. I'll try to squeeze it in before
the end.
Or
if they want to heckle Mr. Brown Thumb. Oh, here they come.
here comes the heckling online there. See, right on cue, Mr. BT. Hey, listen, it's that time of year for the vote.
Yeah, well, once Chicago was back, it opened up voting on January 1st, but it goes on through April 1st.
Right. You know, I know it wasn't, it's not like I kicked it off on my own very radio show here. No, One Seed Chicago, and you can go to oneseedchicago.com. Uh-huh. The links are, of course, on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. And this is the fourth year, and what One Seed, well, why don't you explain how One Seed works, Mr. BT?
Well, One Seed is a project that's very similar to One Book, One Chicago. NeighborSpace, Chicago's Land Trust for Community Gardens, came up with the idea of starting something similar like the One Book program, but with seeds, in order to encourage people to garden in their backyards, their porches, their windowsills, or to join a community garden near them. So what they do is they put up 3 seeds for a vote every year, and they let Chicagoans vote for their favorite, and then the seed that gets the most votes is mailed to everybody who voted for free. So everybody gets free seeds for voting for their favorite. And this year's candidates are eggplant, radishes, and Swiss chard.
All right. Well, we've got, you know, Zena Murray from Logan Square Kitchen in here. And before I reveal my preference, and you must realize, Mr. Brown Thumb, that I'm going to try to influence the election and stuff the ballot box with listeners from my show.
That's fine.
How many times can you vote is my question.
You can only vote once, right?
Once. Yeah.
Well, from a unique computer, right?
Well, because you have to provide your mailing address. So,
darn.
In order for them to send you the seats for free, you need a mailing address. But it's one vote per person. If you have a household, you can split the votes. And
okay, I see. All right, Zena, I have to ask you: of the three, Swiss chard, radishes, or eggplant, what would you be voting for? Do you think?
I would vote for radishes.
Me too.
Awesome. That's my vote too.
See, you guys are such losers.
You're a Swiss chard kind of guy.
I'm a Swiss chard kind of guy. Because, well, no, eggplant for one. What do you do with an eggplant? Okay.
There's so much you can do with an eggplant.
Yeah, throw it against your neighbor's wall. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Didn't we grow them out back?
I know we did. I didn't. You noticed I didn't take any home.
I know, and I made lasagna out of them. They were delicious.
I grow them because they're pretty. That's the reason you grow an eggplant, is because it looks...
You like purple.
I like purple. How many purple plants do you have, all right?
And there's also something really cool that kind of goes in with the whole food thing you guys were talking about earlier, is that this year, One Seed Chicago is teaching people to go from seed to table. So not only are they going to be providing the seeds, the information on how to grow them in your backyard or your windowsill or your porch, but there's also going to be recipes provided by chefs. So if Vina's group or, I guess, employees or customers or clients would like to participate, One Seed is taking recipes from local chefs so that we can show people not only how to grow it, but how to prepare it and sit down and have a healthy meal with your friends and your family.
And I find that there's such a light bulb that goes on when people realize how easy it is to make things that are so delicious and how little space you need to actually grow these things. I mean, Neighbor yeah. Space is an incredible organization, and you know, Ben Helpin and everybody over there is just doing amazing work, and I think it's just really exciting to see this kind of
and the work he's doing. I just want to say is he's helping people find spaces in the city where they can do this kind of growing.
Even more important than that is they actually make sure that that these things are actually well maintained for many, many, many years. I mean, they hold the land in trust.
Mm-hmm.
The little spaces that are under 2 acres that the park district would not be able to handle, and they do. They've been doing this for many, many years. And
Zamboni just sent a tweet that says she's got 3,000 eggplant recipes
on one website. And then, got a vote for radishes, a vote for Swiss chard. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Chard?
Or
yes. Chard.
Is it chard or chard? It's chard.
I think I've heard it both ways.
You know what? I can't even win on poinsettia.
Well,
okay,
I know. And I tried to say some genius name of some verge of sage and got ripped a new one, so I want to make sure if I say chard.
Well, yeah, that was the hallucinogenic
oh
sage.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I
failed Latin.
So.
I'm sorry.
Oh, dear. So, we got the votes are going to start coming in. Go to oneseedchicago.com, cast your vote, and I want...
It's the tweets. I'm sorry. You eggplant haters suck from Garden Fairy.
Do we suck eggplant? Ba-dum-ba. Come on, that was a joke.
Oh, here they come. Here they come. No, now you've just got eggplant on your face.
Ba-dum-ba. That's all the time we have, folks. Good night, everybody.
Exactly. Let me get the phone ringing.
Okay, you better get that. So, you never thought One Seed Chicago could be so much fun, did you, Mr. Brown Thumb?
Actually, it's pretty fun. People really get excited about it. And I've seen, like, when they have in-person voting opportunities because they take a ballot box around different organizations, churches, school groups, and I've seen people openly argue about which seed people should vote for. So it's just like real politics, but with seed.
Early and often, as they say. Well, that's going on. And again, the deadline for the vote is?
April 1st.
April 1st. All right.
That's not a joke.
I want to get something else in that is a little more serious, because you wrote about it, and I didn't have time to have anybody on the show about it. But this coming weekend, the MLK Food Justice Weekend is being held at KAM Isaiah Israel Congregation in Hyde Park. Now, this is they were on the show last year a couple of times. And Robert Neville is an architect. He's chair of the Social Justice Committee. He took me down to their gardens, showed me what they were growing. We even went to a food pantry, and I helped schlep some food that was just harvested over there. And is it about KAM?
Well, this isn't just specific to the city of Chicago. This is like Chicago Common and the neighboring suburbs. Everybody in the area can participate.
Oh, you're talking about One Seed?
Yes.
Okay.
Because we had a caller who I believe just tried to ask me that question, but then hung up.
Quickly, Mr. Brownthumb, you can vote from where?
For One Seed, you can vote from on the website.
But you can live anywhere, right?
Oh, you can. Oh, if you live in the Chicagoland area.
Well, how are you going to stop somebody from Cleveland? Oh, because of mailing address.
Exactly.
Ah,
but,
okay.
One Seed has been very generous with people who don't live in our area who have voted. We will send them the seeds because, I mean, they want to participate in something. If it inspires them to do it in their area, then we'll send them the seeds.
Well, I'm telling people that stuff the ballot box and vote for Swiss chard.
You have followers.
I got followers?
Mm-hmm. Snappy J Dog says, it's beautiful, healthy, and oh my God, if we can get people to eat greens, total win. Shard, okay, I'm done.
There
Chard,
you go.
Pretty and tasty, young and right out of the garden is the best. Have a great day. Dream of spring from Lizzie Flowers.
Oh, and I have one thing, slight criticism about the website, Mr. BT, and that is it's hard to find where those. Well, you got it on the but you have to scroll all the way down to see the explanation. I think that could be. If you go to One Seed Chicago and you're looking for the explanation of the vegetables, it's hard to figure out that it's at the bottom of the page and you have to scroll way down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that could be set up a little better because, see, there it is, Heather. It just pops up there. And the thing I did not know about Swiss chard is that it's really a beet.
Yeah, it's a beet that's been selected for the leafy greens.
It's a mutant beet. I like that. So vote for the mutant beet. Anyway, back to KAM Isaiah Israel, and they're having this Food Justice Weekend next week, Saturday and Sunday. Do you have that information on hand, Mr. Brown-Thumb?
I just posted it on my blog, but they're having a whole bunch of different symposiums, classes, and workshops, and it's all free. But you have to, they do recommend pre-registering for it, but there's a lot of people at the Chicago Honey Co-op that are going to be there. I'm doing workshops and demos, and I think it's something that people should look into going.
I really do, too. I've got the link on my website to KAM Isaiah Israel Congregation. I've got the link to your post on that. And they're really doing great work down there. They're right across the street from Barack Obama's house, so you'll get to shake hands with the Secret Service guy. He probably won't shake hands with you. He'll look at you. They look at you sternly. I don't know how they even keep the congregation going. It's just weird, you know, to have the Secret Service there blocking off the street and eyeballing everybody.
Well, and the rock stars for me are Michael and Sydney from the Chicago Honey Co-op. I mean, these are people that maintain this huge honeybee apiary on the west side of Chicago. And when you meet and talk with them, you just get this really strong sense of where our food comes from and how it gets grown.
Yeah. I guess we got to wrap this up, Mr. Brown Thumb. Anything
Thanks
else you
me.
Want you want to throw in here?
I just want to say Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Well,
thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You're one of my favorite guys and one of my favorite people in the whole horticultural world. And keep up the good work, and you and I we'll got to drag you down to the studio again sometime.
Okay.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
Bye bye. We're just about out of time. I was
going to.
What
a cool guy.
He is. He's everywhere, too. I mean,
You have My Skinny Garden Agrees. I had a hard time finding descriptions on the website as well. And another name for Swiss chard, apparently, is silver beet.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that
either. You learn stuff on this show all the time. I was going to talk about your story, but it's actually in the story, the reader story, about how you were a very sick person and you started eating better and it changed your life.
Right. Well, most of
you got like 20 seconds, so it's got to be real quick right now. Sorry.
I didn't know at the time that all my diseases were preventable, and a lot of them were exacerbated by eating the wrong kinds of food.
Mm-hmm.
And food made me sick, and food made me well. And just like Hippocrates said in ancient Greece, let food be your medicine, and medicine be your food. And it's really the way out of a lot of public health problems.
If you want to know more about that, go to my website, mikenovak.net, this week's show, and you see the information about the Logan Square Kitchen, including the reader story, which goes on at length about the problems that Zena's encountered. And we're going to fight our way through them, aren't we?
Well, they're over. I picked up my licenses and got my final approvals this past week, and so we are out of the woods in City Hall, and we're looking forward to a wonderful 2011 with lots of great events about local food.
Fabulous. You and I will talk again, and I appreciate you coming all the way down to the South Side. That's it for today. Heather's on the phone. Otherwise, you want to say goodbye, Heather? She's waving. Good. That works for radio. And as we always say, go green or go home.